Kyle Rittenhouse did his first post-trial major media interview with the Fox News Channel's Tucker Carlson. Rittenhouse described the part of the reasons that he did what he did in terms of bringing a gun to this situation in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
It was upsetting because Kenosha is my community, and I just was upset seeing my community up in flames.
Yeah, I know you were.
Now, very interesting, the context in seeing cities, not just Kenosha, but a lot of cities around the country, up in flames with riots and things of that nature. There have been a number of comparisons. The New York Post did an article over the weekend. Dominic Carter's been mentioning this for the last week or so. There's been a number of comparisons to the Bernard Goetz case in 1984, where crime all over the city, but particularly on the subway, was out of control. And then there were four muggers shot by Bernard Goetz, somebody that was labeled a vigilante, someone who folks tried to portray as a racist. Ultimately, the jury convicted him of only an illegal gun charge, and they ruled that he had the right to use that weapon. And so I thought it might be interesting to check in with the man himself, see what he thinks the comparisons are. Bernard Goetz. Bernie, I know you don't do a lot of interviews about this subject these days. I appreciate you making a little time for us.
Okay, well, you're very welcome.
Bernie, what do you make of the comparisons between the Rittenhouse case and your own case?
Well, I think there are two main comparisons, and I don't have a lot of hope for the United States addressing it right now. The first one is you had an unethical political prosecution where you have the basically a prosecutor doing legal misconduct, misrepresenting facts to the public, and also engaging in a bad faith prosecution. That's the first comparison. And the public has been tolerating that in the United States, and that's the fundamental issue. Not like your previous WABC host was saying that, you know, Kyle should be suing this person and that person, the president, the news media. That's all well and fine. But so long as America tolerates unethical prosecution without sanctioning the prosecutors, the only time I've heard of this happening in the past 20 or 30 years has been the Duke LaCrosse rape case, which was a prosecutor just engaging in not only a bad faith prosecution, but misleading the public. The prosecutor there got disbarred. I think he spent an hour token time in jail, too. I'm not sure about that. And then the second comparison is you have a large amount of the media is deliberately misleading the public. But again, in the United States, and by the way, I brought this up about unethical prosecutions before, and people say, well, we can't do anything because there's prosecutorial immunity. That's a generality. North Carolina, they dealt with the Duke LaCrosse prosecutor the right way. But you have Kyle Rittenhouse's attorneys were saying the prosecution was unethical. A prosecutor has an obligation to seek a good faith prosecution, to speak the truth and not to misrepresent facts. Attorneys do it, but you should not have a prosecutor deliberately doing it. And you also had Kyle himself saying, and I'm quoting him now, he said, I believe there's a lot of prosecutorial misconduct, not just in my case, but in other cases, end quote. That's basically being ignored by the media. And I think that's a fundamental fault in the United States. It started with my case, and then it grew more and more. It was a number of years afterwards that the Republicans came back. They prosecuted Bill Clinton on they were just looking. They had a special prosecutor on him investigating everything. And finally, they got him on lying about that he denied having sex with a woman or something like that. But it was just that was a political prosecution. At least they weren't misleading the public on that too much. Let me just finish on one thing. The situation has gotten out of hand over the past several years, particularly with the leftists and the Democrats. There's been all kinds of phony prosecutions against political people they don't like, you know, Roger Stone, for example, Trump trying to get him on this, trying to get him on that. Absolutely fraudulent things. And the prosecutors just get away with it. And the FBI now, for all the misconduct the FBI has been doing the past several years with political prosecutions, seems very little is going to happen to them, and certainly nothing's going to happen to the prosecutors.
And there was an interesting article in Reason magazine last month about a Louisiana prosecutor who was found to have covered up rape allegations against a prison official. And in that case, again, there was no accountability whatsoever for government corruption. So this is a problem that's pervasive, irrespective of the politics of the prosecutor responsible for it. Do you think part of the problem in that respect, Bernie, the problem of grandstanding prosecutors seeking to bring these high-profile cases to trial, do you think part of the problem is that we have elected prosecutors in so many parts of the country, and these people view these prosecutions as a way to get votes?
Well, they use it as a way to forward their political goals. I mean, when you have prosecutors being backed by George Soros, people should be suspicious. In New York, they weren't my prosecution. It wasn't backed by Soros. You had a corrupt political establishment here in New York just trying to save face. My case basically derailed at the time we had Mario Cuomo was governor, and the Democrats were thinking of him as their main presidential candidate. And my case derailed Cuomo's presidential ambitions.
In your case,
that wasn't reported in the media here. For example, Cuomo, 6 months after my case, he went to California to test the presidential waters, and he gave speeches in front of thousands of people in both Los Angeles and then San Francisco. And in San Francisco, he talked about how New York had successful social programs for dealing with poverty, and, you know, New York was a role model for the rest of the country. And the audience was openly laughing at him in Los Angeles. You never heard about that in the media here. Then the next day, he went up to San Francisco, the liberal San Francisco, and he gave the same speech. And they said after, they didn't laugh at him, but they said after his speech, you could hear a pin drop. There was no applause. And, you know, it's basically unethical prosecutions should, when you have a prosecutor acting in bad faith, that simply should not be tolerated in the legal system. Now, there is a need for general prosecutorial immunity, but, this is getting ridiculous.
Federal Judge Frederick Block has actually written a column. It's a few years old now, but I think it's just as relevant. I'm going to link to it on my Facebook page if people want to read it at facebook.com/MoranoFan. He believes that we should put an end to prosecutorial immunity for some of the same reasons that you talk about, because these prosecutors really shouldn't be above the law. So it's an interesting thing that a sitting federal judge, is saying that that same thing.
I didn't hear that, but that's wonderful
to
hear.
I'm going
to
send.
I don't have much hope for it for improvement.
But. I'm going to send you this article. One comparison that's been made in your case and in the Kyle Rittenhouse case was, even though that neither of you were could credibly be called white supremacists, you had a lot of people seeking to make both of your cases a racial issue. In your case, you had folks like Al Sharpton out there, sort of trying to fan the flames of racial hyperbole.
Well, by the way, let me mention a cute little tidbit here. My case started Al Sharpton. It put him on the map. When the media, the dishonest media and political establishment, was looking for a black spokesman at that time, at the time of my incident, when the media actually had a policy, media here in the city, of not covering Al Sharpton because he was considered a fraud. Roy Innes, when I talked to him, he said he tried initially, he reached out to Al Sharpton before my case on some political things, and he said, well, he was going to, they agreed to work, Roy agreed to work with him on one project, I forget what it was, and Roy said he would bring 20 people, and Al said, told Roy, I will bring 20 people too, and then Roy, when they went to the incident, Roy was there with his 20 people. Al Sharpton came alone. He had nobody with him. And Al Sharpton was a nobody. But they wanted a spokesman. They got it in Al Sharpton. I found out about him. The first time I found out about him, I walked back into my apartment building. I'd been out shopping for about 15 minutes or half an hour. Must have been half an hour. And I came back, and the doorman said, by the way, these are for you. And he handed me 100 white envelopes, all similar. He said, someone left them off for here for you. And I said, what is this about? And he said, well, there was a demonstration in front of the building. It was very funny. It was this guy, people were marching around in a circle in front of the building carrying signs. The media came, took some pictures, and they were filming them. And then the media left. And as soon as the media left, all the people left. And he said they were here for a total of maybe 5 minutes. So anyway, the next day, it was in the papers about a demonstrations in front of my house accusing me of racism. And by the way, of the 100 envelopes, 40 of them were empty. Of the 60 other ones, it's about 55 of them were all written by the same person. And it was just Al Sharpton held up, these are a bunch of letters from people who are, you know, protesting Bernie Getz, and, you know, it was all baloney. Well, I diverged.
No, no. Well, in some ways,
on the subject of race.
On the subject of race, do you think that part of the reason both your case and the Rittenhouse case became racial flashpoints is maybe because there were careers to be made by fanning the flames of racial disharmony?
Yes, but there's two main reasons why race is used in cases like this. One reason is if you have nothing else, you cry racism. And then the other reason, unfortunately, a standard tactic of the political left has been since the Communist Party started, is to divide people. They fan the flames of racial resentment as much as they can, and if people believe the media, and many people are in touch with limited or have a certain amount of limited media in their life, if they believe it, then they say the cases are racial. And it's bad faith. There's a lot of dishonesty in America. That's what Dr. Kevorkian said before he died, when he talked about, they asked him, what do you think the biggest problem in America is? And he says it's dishonesty. There's too much lying going around.
And it sounds like you're not at all optimistic that that'll change anytime soon.
Well, if the prosecutors are able to just get away with it, and I think in general prosecutorial immunity is a good thing, because you need, you know, you can't have any time someone is prosecuted, they turn around and they say, well, I'm being discriminated against. But that when there are cases openly of the prosecutor acting in bad faith, like in my case, there was numerous incidences where he was misleading the public deliberately, just, you know, smear campaigns. Same thing in the Rittenhouse prosecution. Same thing in the political prosecution against Donald Trump and Trump supporters the past, since he was elected. And I don't see people don't even are even talking about it in the media being an issue now, even though you did have Rittenhouse himself brought this up, and he made some statements about it 2 days ago, and so did his attorney. But people are not focusing on that, and you know, when they say, well, we have a dishonest media, and Rittenhouse should be suing the media, that doesn't address the fundamental problem. Because when a person in a political case, if you're being prosecuted, that shuts you down. You can't defend yourself. You can't really present your political case well if you're being prosecuted, if you want to have the media act better, prosecute or sanction the attorney who did the Rittenhouse prosecution, mm-hmm. and let the media cover that story. See if they do.
Bernie, very quickly, I want to pick your brain on one or two other issues because it's been a while since we spoke. You ran for mayor 20 years ago. You were one of the first major figures in New York to call for decriminalization of marijuana. Now it looks like New York has sort of caught up with you, and that New York and New Jersey are moving ultimately towards decriminalization. How are you feeling about America's marijuana policy? Do you feel like we're moving in the right direction?
I don't know. You might as well decriminalize marijuana and probably other drugs too. But it's not going to solve America's problems. Would make things. Why make problems for people if they smoke marijuana? Why make problems for people if they take drugs? That's my own feeling, and it also causes a lot of police abuse and stuff. You know, you have police. You have these cases where they break down the door of somebody, and because they think they were involved in a drug deal and this and that. You take the money out of drugs by decriminalizing them. But, you know, the marijuana is a positive step.
You were also one of the biggest promoters of vegetarianism when you ran for mayor, when you ran for public advocate. Now, the incoming mayor of New York City is a vegetarian, mostly for health reasons, not necessarily for animal rights reasons. But are you at all optimistic that we could see some of the aspects of your platform that dealt with promoting vegetarianism enacted in an Adams administration?
Well, I don't know what to make of Adams. His going in to the election, I was under the impression that he was the handpicked candidate of de Blasio, and that he's, you know, that he's in with that whole clique, and that he was involved with a lot of the crap that goes on in New York, something about homeless shelters and stuff and people getting money and stuff like that. But he's talking a different line now. Let's see. I think it's something people don't talk about too much right now, but I think vegetarianism is a fundamental factor in advancing civilization, that there's one species on the planet that controls everything, and our species, I think, has to or should mature and grow. It may not, but for billions of years, it's been one big restaurant out there. All the animals eating other animals, and people talk about, well, nature would be. Might be better off without mankind, but nature itself tends to be a bit of a nightmare, and you just don't see it as much when there's not the density of animals.
I will point out that your old website from 16 years ago is still up. If people want to look at your platform and some of the other ideas on political reform and some other things that were very progressive and very forward-thinking at the time, they could go to BernieForMayor.com. Bernie, it is always a great opportunity to speak with you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, well, yes. But by the way, I feel America is making a lot of mistakes. New York's making a lot of mistakes. what just happened in this last voting, I just want to bring up a few things. People were saying about many of the New York Republicans voted for this, one of the big funding bills.
Infrastructure,
because because basically it bails out New York City. What it does, it promotes socialism. And it's bad for America, but one of the main things that the Democrats wanted was to bail out New York City, bail out California, and indirectly bail out Illinois, and so they got it in that bill. So it's what's going in America. There's just too much deceit, and America. I just hope that America will become a more honest country. And
Bernie,
what's going to be will be.
I have to run. I appreciate you taking the time. You're welcome here anytime. And I appreciate you. I appreciate the conversation.